Hello and welcome to episode 200 of the Worn and Wound podcast.
Yeah. 200 episodes.
Wow. 200 episodes, yeah. You just heard him. That is Zach Kazan. Zach, hello, welcome.
Hello, thank you. Great to be here for number 200.
Number 200. Great. We're also joined in studio by Zach Weiss. Mr. Zach Weiss.
Whoa.
You have probably been on more episodes than anybody else. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On
thank
200
you.
Episodes.
200 episodes flies by. Who knew?
How does it? It was like just yesterday. Yeah? Yeah.
I actually, you know, 100 episodes does feel fairly recent somehow. Though I don't know when that was, to be honest. But I feel like I just kind of remember that being a thing. Yeah. So yeah, the next 100 went down pretty quick.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Cheers to the next 100. This has been, I've been doing this for a year now.
Yeah, about a year. Exactly. Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun. And I don't, well, I guess that would be about, 56-ish episodes. But yeah, no, they've been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of great guests, and even just conversation amongst us. We thought we would do something fun today for the 200th episode. And we thought we would talk about anything but watches, really. Oh, that's not really true.
Yeah, I think probably won't be very successful.
We will veer into watches a little bit. Starting with the wrist check, of course. And we asked for questions on Instagram, anything but watches. And a lot of you just asked us about watches.
Yep.
Anyway, so.
Turns out you don't care about us at all, just the watch.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that feels, yeah. Come on. We're also joined with Walter, our producer in studio. Walter, how are you? Okay. He gave us a thumbs up, so we're good. Okay, before we get into our discussion about non-watch stuff, let's talk about something watches related, as in what is on our wrist. Zach Kazan, what are you wearing on your wrist today?
I'm wearing a vintage today that I wear frequently, but I decided to throw it on. I'm wearing my vintage Port Royal. It has like an oval case shape. It's very funky from the 70s. Just sort of an unusual watch that I acquired a while back, and I don't wear it often, but I always enjoy putting it on when I do decide to wear it.
The Port Royal, okay, interesting.
Do you think they'll ever bring the Port Royal? Port Royal. I naturally want to say Royale too. Port Royal with cheese.
Well, that's what they call it in.
Because of the metric system.
Yeah.
I don't imagine they'll bring it back. I don't think that this was a I don't think this was a very like prestigious line for Zenith in the past. They seem to be kind of going in a different direction, more towards like sporty, like higher end watches. The Port Royal, I think, was always kind of like a more of an entry level, like dressy type style. So I don't see them bringing it back, but who knows? I'm bad at predicting these things. But they made a lot of like really unusually shaped Port Royal cases back in the day, and they're kind of an interesting thing to dig into if you're into that sort of thing, which I am. So
it deserves to be brought back. Maybe this could be a good test bed for like funky new.
Yeah,
stuff,
I mean, right? Hey, like Zenith, if you're listening,
let's go.
I would be interested in seeing what a modern Port Royal like this would look like. But
enough Primeros, 384, whatevers. It's like Port Royal,
Port Ovals. Royal.
Bring back the oval.
The Port Royal sounds like an 80s daytime drama television show or something.
My mind went towards like some sort of cheap cognac. Or something.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or well, I guess it's the port. I guess it'd be a port.
Yeah.
That'd be confusing.
Guess, yeah.
Bad branding.
A dessert wine or a 80s drama. Yeah.
Maybe both.
Maybe both. Zach Weiss, what are you wearing on your wrist? Whoa, hold on. He has two watches.
Oh, I'm double wristing.
He's double wristing today.
I always forget that, so we can actually hold it up.
No hiding from that.
I am double wristing today. It's a bit of a personal experiment here, not to see if I want to be a double wristing type of gentleman.
Hey, don't rule it out.
No. Oh, yeah, you know, it's true.
You
it's
might
true.
Get there.
Might get there. So on my left wrist, my watch, classic mechanical watch wearing wrist, I have my newest acquisition of watches, which is the Synchron Military PVD.
Nice. Love it. On a pretty slick strap there, too.
On a Rust Adapt strap, which does work quite well. It's a little Halloween-y, perhaps, black and orange all around, but it is does pick up the kind of warm faux patina loom tones and the orange in the hands, which are nicely muted. It isn't like a super aggressive orange hand, and the Rust strap is also intentionally not a very aggressive orange.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, this is a strange watch with a strange story, or no story, depending on how you go about it. It was very much an impulse purchase. We actually have never even written about this watch because it came out and sold out before we even knew it existed.
Yes.
And then I don't think we ever received information.
Yeah, we reached out and asked for one, and then they were just kind of gone. So that's fine. Congratulations to Rick.
To Rick from Synchron. I saw one at the pop-up. And I admired it on the wrist of the gentleman who had it. And then a week later saw one for sale. And that's really the whole story. Conveniently, if you're interested in these, they are not going for much more than the original retail, despite having been a limited edition. So it's not like a difficult watch to get. So that's one wrist. And then the other wrist is the illustrious Garmin Forerunner 35.
All right.
Excellent. Which is a little, it's like an $85 health tracking, GPS, running watch. I typically only wear it running, but I'm trying to see what it tracks throughout some days, and it might, I'm investigating if I want a tracker on me at all times. Basically, what I'm going for here.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. Right now, though, I just have two watches, and I feel really silly.
Very subtle, too, with a orange strap and a bright blue baby blue strap.
Yeah. So the baby blue was like $35 less than the black strap because clearly it was like less popular. But I mean, I like the blue, but I mean, why pay more for it? Just running it typically.
So. And double wristing is not subtle anyways. So screw it. Just go all in. Yeah. I like it. I'm wearing what do we call this? The Everyday Tuna?
It's an Everyday Tuna.
Tuna, the small tuna case. I think there's a K in there.
I don't remember the actual.
the exact reference is eluding me at the moment, but I still like this watch a lot. I still like this case. It's super easy to wear and fun to wear. When we did the pop up, we had some, not this watch, but we had some watches with this same case. I think
there's one. So currently, I believe, I might be wrong, but there has only ever been one version of that, which is the 43mm automatic, like 4R version of the Tuna that's been U.S. Distributed. And that is the newer model with the like Antarctic dial with the little penguin feet on it. Wildly popular at the pop-up.
Everybody wanted to see this thing at the pop-up, and everybody that tried it on was shocked at how awesome it wore on the wrist. And it's like, yes, of course. People bought them. And honestly, you don't really notice the footprints are more subtle in person. I think they're still there. It's still like kind of random, but
cute and quirky.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone had a different idea of what the feet were.
Yeah.
No one can really decide. That's what they kind of looked like to me. It's like a chicken foot.
Yeah. It's still a cool watch though. And I like this watch. It's still a great footprint. And, for the price, it's a pretty awesome watch.
I had mine on earlier today.
True story.
The gunmetal version, which I also don't remember the number on, but that was part of the like Urban Street series, which I think was like the year before this one, but also JDM, unfortunately. But just such a great wearing watch.
So that's what we're wearing. We had something exciting happen on the site this week, which is also kind of just tangentially related to watches. We added the ED Everyday Carry stuff to the shop.
Yeah.
Now, listeners of the podcast know that they keep the likes of me and Zach Kazan kind of well cordoned away from shop stuff. But I saw this happen from afar, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Appreciate it.
Maybe tell us about what kind of EDC stuff can people expect to find?
Yeah, so EDC or Everyday Carry, is kind of a grouping of items that often watches actually fall into. They're considered everyday carry, but the non-watch assortment is usually keychains, pens, flashlights, pocket knives, multi-tools, things that are often pocketable. Seems to be like one of the defining or easily worn, like a defining characteristic of it. You know, I think it's also a pretty one of these categories that you can go kind of far and wide with as well. But it's definitely something that we've noticed watch enthusiasts are also into, particularly like classically, like watches, knives, and pens are kind of like a trilogy of things that like dudes who are into one tend to be into the others kind of like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the, you know, over the last few years, as we've become more aware of it on a personal level and as well as a professional level, just meeting people who work at these brands, such as James Brand, who we had an interview with one of the founders of James Brand on the podcast several months ago. Unfortunately, wasn't on that one, but you should check it out. It's a great listen. That these are, you know, it's actually a really nice analogy to the kind of smaller independent watch brand world that's out there in pens and knives and flashlights and everything. So, you know, the collection we curated as a launch includes brands like James Brand, like we mentioned, like I mentioned, Finch, which is founded, actually co-founded by Steve Laughlin from Raven Watch Co. So he also has a knife brand. We have Tactile Turn Pens, which are made in Texas and designed in Texas. And, you know, that's like a small brand that grew really quickly because they make this beautiful product. So there's really, which I really just like, you know, that kind of similarity there. And they're beautifully crafted. Like if you love the feel of a, you know, a bezel, like if you're the kind of person who geeks out over the feel of a really good bezel, you'll geek out over the feel of a really good, well-machined pen or knife, you know?
Yeah.
And then we had some larger brands too, such as Victorinox, who, you know, we brought in their watches recently, and part of that was because we were also going to bring in their knives, and it's just, you know, that is like a, that's just a staple, you know? Yeah. The little classic SD knife, like, I at this point, largely because of Baselworld, they used to give them out at Basel, I have them in like every drawer in every room and in my house, and they're like always there at that moment when you need to cut a little thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really cool, and I'm excited for the shop. And I guess we can just kind of jump into it, because one of the questions asked this, in honor of the shop update, what EDC items does the Worn & Wound team swear by? Yeah. So, a lot of these things I find very practical and are things that I keep like on my desk or around like where I'm doing stuff. However, I will confess that I don't really carry a lot with me.
Yeah.
Like when I'm on the go, it's pretty much like my wallet, my phone, and my keys, and that's it. Because I like kind of just a slim layout, and the, you know, my keys don't have like bottle openers and flashlights and all this kind of stuff on them. But I keep all of that. I have all of that stuff around me. I didn't know that Tactile Turn was in the shop. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah,
I just picked up one of their Nautilus.
Yeah, they pens. Do like seasonal Cerakoted like limited edition colors.
It's awesome. Cool. It's beautiful in person. So I've got that, and I've got of course Ian Schoen, our friend Ian Schoen, one of his pens on my office. I've got a quiet carry pocket knife and. And, you know, we get a lot of boxes. And
yeah, we get a lot
right?
of boxes.
So there's a lot of, like, just little bits and bobs and things that I use that I keep kind of around me that I use every single day that I do find invaluable that I, you know, sound like are going to be on the show. I don't know if there's any one that I'd be like, I have to have this. Yeah. I like a good pen, but I'm also, like, won't complain if it's just, like, a Bic. Around plastic pen around me, and you know, I'm not like, okay, I've got my, you know,
yeah,
got my sweet pen here.
No, but I'm definitely more like that. And I kind of wonder if it's a little bit of like a city dwelling thing versus like being places where maybe you need to, like, not like, like people are like cutting down trees every day, but like, you know, I don't know. Or like in the city, it's like the lights are bright, they're always on, like the city, you know, but so it's not like I always need a flashlight. That said, I did put a keychain flashlight, it was one of the products that we carry in the store now, but I was kind of testing it. Just Nightcore, this tiny little thing that you can push a button on. It goes up to 500 lumens, which is blindingly bright.
You gotta be careful with it.
Yeah,
if you accidentally look at it, like you're gonna have a bad day.
No, totally. Like it's great for shining on your watch to power up the lume, but don't look at your watch while you do it because the reflection's brutal. But that's come in handy, and it's small enough that I can carry it. But I'm more like you in that, like, I have a Leatherman like on my desk at all times. That tends to be my go-to knife now. That was a birthday gift a couple years ago. When we were doing the pop-up, I mean, that thing was attached to my pocket the whole time because there was like always something that needed something done, you know. But wallets and things also are part of it.
Look at you. You've got your wallet out, right? You take it out to sit down. There's an episode of Seinfeld with George Costanza.
Yeah, George Costanza, the huge wallet, yeah.
He's got this kind of,
yeah.
He's got this kind of, look, this is, you need the slim one.
No,
this,
I know. Everyone goes slim now.
This is a leather pocket one. Shinola gave this to me when I met with them at Basel, like 8 or 9 years ago. And I don't know why. I was like, oh, that's nice and slim. So I put my stuff in it, and I've literally been using it every day since then, without even really think. I mean, it used to be like light orange, and now it's like it's broken in really well. Yeah. So,
Those were nice. Those were all made out of like veg tan Horween leather and everything. I remember I had a couple too, but I don't know what happened to them. But they were really nice. And this was actually, you know,
you keep coupons in there.
Yeah. So this is a monk made wallet. So this is something that a collaboration we did a few years ago with a guy in West Virginia, a handmade wallet. And I've always been a bifold. So this is actually green shell cordovan on the outside. Yeah. This thing, I mean, I've used it every day since I've gotten it. It's beaten up, but it is way too big at this point. And that's me. Like, yeah, I have like, I go to a coffee place one time. They give me the card. I'll be like, I'll be back. It's my name. And then like, you know, I have four of them now and I haven't thrown any.
Subway club cards half filled.
Yeah, no. But so I need to switch to the... to one of those slim down things. It's a matter of discipline.
Another collab.
Yeah.
You guys should do.
Yeah
for sure.
Zach Kazan, do you have EDC stuff? Do you carry around stuff?
Well, I mean, I live in New Hampshire where we cut down trees.
So you carry like a machete and guns.
So yeah, I have lots of, lots of knives hanging off me at all times. I'm very similar to you guys. I don't have a lot of like stuff that I carry, but I have all kinds of just crap on my desk and around me at all times. I also have a Schoen design pen and a tactile turn pen. So shout out to both of those brands. They're great. The only thing I'd add really is I carry headphones with me. I carry like Bluetooth wireless headphones and wired headphones because I'm always forgetting to charge my Bluetooth thing. So I always have like, that's kind of my, like, I guess my EDC quirk is I always have like two pairs of headphones with me.
That
I'm forgetting.
I'm right there with you, and that makes total sense. I sometimes will have two sets of Bluetooth headphones, or I end up leaving one thing someplace, so it kind of is a rotating backup cast, but I'm there. I forget to charge, and then I get very upset if I can't have like music.
It's a bummer when
you're
like when you like flip the thing open and like the light doesn't come on, and you realize your headphones are dead, and it's just like, oh no, that's not what you want.
That's
like,
that's
like hours of podcasts to listen to, and no power.
That's a survival rule. It's the two is one, one is none.
Two is one and one is none.
Rule. So there you go. I think that's meant for like emergency type stuff, but. You know,
podcasts can be an emergency, as I think we all are aware.
Okay, but you don't have like iodine pills and you know, all the survival type stuff.
I do not.
Sewn into your shirt pockets and all
this. And EDC can definitely like veer into that more kind of like survivalist or kind of tactical thing, which is not really where we're going to be taking it. We're more on the design focus.
More power to you if you're prepared for the end of the world. That's great.
Nothing against it. Just our approach is like it's definitely on the more of a
like everyday practical.
Yeah, practical. Kind of, like we really some of the brands like like James Brand is a really good example. Like they make pocket knives that are very high end pocket knives, but they're they have this kind of softer design. They're usually have all the other like functionalities. So
they're
like
not tactical.
Yeah, they're not. And then they have like, the backs can be used as a screwdriver and these other things. Sure. So it's like, it's a little more of that.
You're not going into war with it.
No. Okay. I don't think so.
No. I have a James knife or James Brand pen as well.
Okay. Yeah.
James Helms of Worn and Wound gave it to me for Christmas. Thank you, James. I like that pen a lot.
Yeah.
Actually, it's got a nice like textured on the, and then it's got a little thing that hooks into the clicky part.
Yeah,
I really don't know. I'm sure pen people
learning,
are just like screaming in there.
About all this stuff.
But yeah, I've only just like become aware, I guess, more and more of the crossover there, especially on the pen side. And my first clue in was meeting Ian Schoen, who is a lovely person and has like a real enthusiasm for what he does, and he's just a pleasure to talk to. We should have him on the podcast. I'm sure he's been on the podcast before.
Yes, but it's been a while.
We'll
he was one of like the first 50 episodes, I guess.
And he also makes pretty awesome watches.
He does.
Shouts to Ian Schoen there. Okay, let's jump into some more questions that listeners sent in. Thank you if you sent a question on our Instagram. Okay, the first one, just right off the bat, aggressive, calling out Zach. SBGA375 review? ?
Sure. Okay. At some point.
All right, you heard it here.
I've written a lot of Grand Seiko reviews
lately. It's coming, though.
I was actually thinking about it recently, and like I think I might wait quite a while because it's not a watch that's going anywhere. So I might do that a year in,
like a year of ownership. Yeah. And then you could talk about it, not in terms of like, this is the movement caliber, this is all the, but just talk about like the experience of owning it and wearing it around, exactly. And what kind of straps you use and what kind of situations you like, exactly, appreciate it in, right?
I feel like I keep getting into these, like writing these Grand Seiko articles, and every time I'm like, oh, it's the spring drive section again, we're going and talking about the spring, and it's like, you know, that's all still true, and it'll have to touch on that, but like, yeah, this is, I don't know, yeah, this, I'm experiencing this watch a lot, I wear it a lot, so I figured I let it steep for a while. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll mark that one off. Okay. The next one, coffee! !!
Also aggressive.
Also, yeah. What's your favorite method of extraction for the perfect cup? I don't understand what the extraction part is, but I'm not like a huge coffee. My method is generally like put the bean things in the little paper thing and fill the thing with water and hit the button. But he's implying that there's like...
Yeah, there's all sorts of methods. He's
implying that there's something else that I'm missing
that
here.
That would be... I think the method you're referring to is drip.
Okay.
It's a drip extraction,
a
classic.
I drip extract. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the technical way. But we, in the office, we have a Bonavita. So if you're asking
That's what
he uses, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
The Bonavita is a high-quality drip machine. I have the same one at home. It has some fancy temperature gauges, and it does some pre-soaking of your coffee. So it actually is notably better than your like, you know, I don't know, $20 thing you have in college that just tastes like burnt horribleness. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll cut that part out. And starting here... Oh, I do a drip extract method. Yeah.
Bonavita.
Bonavita.
Oh, you're a Bonavita man. Yeah.
I like to have them soaked beforehand a little bit.
Understandable. Understandable.
What about you guys? Zach, yeah. Andy drink, do you extract coffee cups?
So I'm not like, I've gone through like phases in my life with coffee. I'm currently not really drinking a lot of coffee. I'm just trying to like cut back on my caffeine intake in general.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I have kind of like a cheap drip coffee maker that I've had for a while, and it like makes like a pretty average cup of coffee. The way that I prefer to make coffee, and I've tried like a bunch of different methods, is with an AeroPress. So that's kind of my very simple, kind of like no electricity way to, you have to heat water obviously, but it's basically just like a compression scheme where you like you press you know air into the you know air and water into the coffee, and it extracts the, listen, I'm not a scientist, I don't I'm not, you press down on a plunger and coffee ends up in your mug, and it's really good. It's very, makes a very strong cup of coffee. I went through a phase where I was like trying all different like AeroPress techniques. If you like do a deep dive into like, if you YouTube search for this, like you'll find all different ways that people brew AeroPress coffee. You can do it like, you know, inverted and upside down, and it's crazy. But they're cheap. Like if you like coffee, I recommend trying it out. You can get them for like $15-$20 on Amazon all day long. Makes a good cup of coffee.
I think that sound was Jonathan Abreu leaving the podcast.
Yeah, right.
He's apologies to coffee enthusiasts. I'm beyond my not my area of expertise, but I enjoy a good cup of coffee, and I like to experiment a little bit. AeroPress is about as deep as I've been recently.
I appreciate good coffee. I like coffee. I'm just ignorant of
its extraction techniques.
Yeah, of its extraction techniques. Yeah. What about you?
So like at this point in home, I pretty much just use the Bonavita. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, for my, like brewing like four cups of coffee in the morning, whatever, that's definitely like the best way to go about it, because both my girlfriend and I will drink a cup of coffee or two before we leave. And on the weekends, you know,
all day.
There's constant coffee. But I do really like a French press. Okay. So I have French presses at home and have had French presses, and that was my preferred method for a long time, because you know, it's rich, robust flavor. Okay. Right. I also have the pour over things, you know, like a nice ceramic pour over, which I never got very good. I know that's like a thing, like real, I think coffee nuts prefer that, but you got to weigh out the beans, you got to heat the coffee to the right temperature, you got to time it all. way too fussy for me.
That's what those Brew Watch has the little deal there.
Yeah, there's right. Well, yeah, and then there's espresso and all that. So I had an AeroPress for a while. I did like that. I just in the end preferred like steeped coffee versus that method, but it is a cool thing to try out. So yeah. Part of the reason, and this is the lamest of it all, but part of the reason why I like the Bonavita is because it goes into a filter and then you toss it out at the end, and like cleaning is really easy. Okay. Like cleaning a French press every day pissed me off. Yeah. So.
You know that I don't know if you experience, maybe you know how to ask for coffee properly, but when it Basel every year and they'd be like, oh, do you want something? And I'd say, oh, let's take coffee, expecting like, you know, I feel like when I walk into a Starbucks and ask for a cup of coffee,
that doesn't exist.
I get like a little cup of coffee. So in Basel, you just kind of look at me. And then I would get like something different every single time. And usually it'd be like in this tiny little deal and it'd be like a little sip of something. And I never quite figured out how to just ask for, all I wanted was just a normal.
Yeah. Because that doesn't exist outside of the US. That's a Cafe Americano, perhaps. Which is just espresso with hot water, I believe.
But they don't do just bean drip coffees. They don't extract coffee like this in other. Oh, this is an American thing. Okay,
I think largely.
All right,
it's an American thing.
We've ruined everything, even coffee. Yeah.
Okay. The next one is simply, do you explore history? Which is interesting. In I guess there's a couple things. In the context of what we do for a living, I think a lot of that is just kind of inherently involved, but also maybe like on our personal lives, do we spend time like reading about history? You have like lots of history books at home about like, you know, the founding of the country, or you know, I don't know.
I don't really.
Do you guys read history? Do you read history? Who do you read? What do you look at? I know. We. This is something that I love kind of going down little rabbit holes of weird things that I find. Zach Kazan, you and I on Slack the other day went down this hole of
George Daniels in the coaxial escapement.
And him like, you know, quote unquote, shopping that around to some of the big brands and some of the prototypes that he had made. And, you know, I think I'd found this one that that Jack Forster had found in this museum. It was a Nautilus, a 3700, a reference 3700 that he had like built the prototype version of his coaxial escapement in the movement of this. Mm-hmm. And I guess three of these were made. But this is one that he wore every day for like 12 years. Mm-hmm. This reference 37, you know, it's beat to heck. It's all scratched up. I mean, it looks awesome. And we were seeing, you know, this is like the ultimate hype on hype watch, the rarest of the rare. But anyways, this sent us down like a whole like hole of looking at like what that process was like. And there's some literature online, and then there's actual books where he kind of talks about this. And I think I sent you this letter, or something that had, you know, him where him, he's kind of recounting meeting with some of the Patek people talking about the process of, which was pretty funny. So anyway, there are lots of things like that I really enjoy, looking into as well. Zach, I think you're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah. I love history. I love watching, like history documentaries and reading about, historical topics that are, you know, of interest to me, but I enjoy history quite a bit. And it, like, as you said, it goes hand in hand with, you know, with watches and kind of what we write about. And there's an aspect to watches and writing about watches that is like deeply entwined with history. So.
Yeah. Zach Weiss, you put an old link in the Slack channel the other week by Mark MacArthur Christie, I think, about like the Swiss copying the British watchmaking.
It's an interesting article. So it was about a paper by Rebecca Struthers, Dr. Rebecca Struthers, who's one of the few like doctors in horology based in the UK. And she'd written a paper, I don't know if it's like a thesis or something, but about how... some of these early Swiss movement pocket watches, and I have not read it, so I might be getting this not quite accurate, and I apologize, but how there was a lot of almost like forgery, or it was like a replicating of what British brands were doing, kind of like sold as a Swiss at the time, and it's sort of, you know, sort of an industrialization sort of process that has probably led to, you know, Swiss watch industry, you know, at the time, you know, kind of blooming, but it was just interesting kind of sourcing that, you know, it's digging up the I guess slightly dirty roots of these things,
sweep it under the rug maybe. And this is pre wristwatch era.
This is long ago.
Watch type stuff, but
yeah, pocket watches for sure. Yeah, now in the context of watches, of course. Yeah, I'm interested in the history. I don't like often just sit down with like a book on, you know, American history or something like that, you know. I know plenty of people do. Like my dad is a World War II like history buff. I have some friends who are also specifically World War II buffs, but that's never been my specific cup of tea, just to sit down and read like that. But rabbit holes in regards to watches, always infinitely fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And manufacturing in general. I tend to find stuff like that interesting.
Yeah. I think just the general curiosity that we have, which is kind of a requisite for what we do, I would say, leads to you kind of question a lot of the things that you've heard over and over again. Eventually, you're like, I don't know, was it really? Like, how did that really go down? Or maybe something being the marketing that you're like, wow, that sounds incredible. I think I would like to learn a little bit more about that. And then you kind of end up discovering the reality whatever. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I would say if you are a curious person and you, you know, there's a lot of just stories that are associated with a lot of watches and historic watches and quote unquote iconic watches and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, don't just repeat it. If you hear it, like somebody's, oh, this watch did that, or this brand is associated with that, like really look into the why and the how, and then you'll kind of get an understanding of like, oh yeah, this really did this, or it wasn't quite the way that maybe the brand is portraying it to be. We referenced the Everest summit between the Smiths and the Explorer the other week.
There's a lot
that's
of like telephone effect with these kinds of facts too. So like I just half-assedly regurgitated something that I don't quite remember, and then somebody might say it as though it was true, and next thing you know we have
so you're saying the Swiss are pure forgery.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, but you know, I mean, it's a little thing of like, yeah, the Rolex was the first watch or whatever to summit the mountain, and it's like, or was it just there? What is, you know, it's like part of it, and you the little factoids, you know.
And like all that stuff is interesting. And it, like, I, if you like the Explorer, like that shouldn't take anything away from your enjoyment of the Explorer. Like we've talked about this a lot of times, you know, like the fact that the Speedmaster has all that history associated with it. That's not why you buy the watch. We don't have to like rehash all that kind of stuff. But if you're curious about that kind of stuff, like there is a lot of resources out there to really like get lost in. So I think we all are very much in agreement there. The next one, your favorite cheap activities to do with your young kids.
You're the only one who qualifies.
As the sole father.
This one falls
here
to Blake.
Yeah, I mean, I do all kinds of stuff with my kid. I'm fortunate to live very nearby a lot of parks, and it's summertime, so there's nothing better than that. I used to live in St. Louis, and my son was born there. So St. Louis has a great park, Forest Park, which is honestly one of the best parks that I've ever been to, bar none. It's massive. There are museums in it. They're all free. The zoo, which is a world-class zoo, it's also free. I'm used to just kind of taking my kid to the park and spending like whole days there. But when it's colder out, we you know, like every kid, he's got big tubs of Legos and that kind of stuff. So we will kind of put, so we do this thing where, like, you know, you get him some of the big sets of like Star Wars ships or whatever thing, right? And you put it together and it's great, but then it's just together and it's like a little fragile. Like, what do you suppose, you know? Mm-hmm. And my wife would not let us just like display these finished Lego pieces like in our living room or something. So honestly, like we would take them apart, like pieces of them apart, and like see what new things we could build with the pieces. So like the wings from an X-wing and the body from like some sports car or whatever, and you know, all these little various pieces taken apart of other full kits, and then kind of see what we could recombine together. So and that way you don't have to like, because Lego kits can get pretty expensive, especially like Star Wars ones and all that kind of stuff. So if you've got a few of them, like, don't be scared to, you know, maybe take them apart and try doing new things, unless you get a lot of enjoyment out of seeing it done and finished on your shelf. Mm-hmm. There's only one that we haven't taken apart, and that is the 1989 Batmobile.
Oh,
which is pretty awesome. It's huge. That sits on his windowsill in his room with a little Batman, a little Vicky Vale, and a little Jack Nicholson Joker. Everything That's else cool. we've taken apart. Millennium Falcons, everything. All of it. It's all in pieces, in various pieces. So so yeah, that I would recommend. I mean, we also play like Super Mario Brothers and that kind of stuff, like everybody. but those are my kind of few suggestions there. Do you think 80s style watches are making a comeback? So this is a little bit about obviously about watches, and I don't think there's any denying that there seems to be something that has tapped into like a cultural zeitgeist, not just in watches but just in general about like 80s type stuff. And maybe this is just the cyclical nature of fashion period. I know the high school students and youths that I see walking around me in my neighborhood all look like they were dressed in the early 90s or the trends and the style that I see young kids like kind of embracing now seems I remember that
93 to 96.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. I guess the 80s, maybe it's just all part of this like nostalgia that's coming back, or is a younger generation just discovering this stuff for the first time? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it's generation bring maybe what their parents were into when they were adolescents, maybe. Like I think about when I was a teenager, my parents are baby boomers, so like I was exposed to a lot of like 60s stuff, you know, and like music and movies from the 60s. And so I think maybe like that's happening now with the 80s and 90s, as these kids, from our generation, like, you know, with the parents from our generation, that their children are starting to age and discovering what we were into when we were young.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I probably thought I was a pretty hip high schooler listening to like Led Zeppelin and Supertramp and stuff that my dad had like introduced me to. And I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's awesome. Yeah. Right. What about you, Zach?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's a cycle. I think like our generation was a little bit more, at least musically and whatever. Like, I feel like new wave and all that stuff was a little bit more like for. We were the ones who were kind of going through that, as that was our 20-year kind of gap.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like I said, it feels very 90s.
Yeah.
For the kids, at least. In terms of watches, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I think of 80s watches, I think of, what do I think of? The vintage Timex Digitals and things like that, and Casio Digital. But those have been around for, for a while. I mean... Mm-hmm. If in high school I'd gone into an American Apparel, I probably could have gotten a gold T80 type thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily that new. So, but other than that, like, I'm trying to think of what like 80s style is. That sort of a two-tone question, perhaps, you know?
Yeah, that's the good call. There was a guy. Where was he located? Slovakia, I think. A listener in Slovakia. Yeah. Well, shouts to you. But he asks, any love for two-tone? I think that is just kind of a general style that I associate with that era. And I'm a little hit or miss myself on two-tone type stuff. What about you? Are you going to rock a two-tone anytime soon?
The Rollosaur. Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, there's... the Grand Seiko SG, I don't even remember. It's a JDM model. It's the Elegance case, but it's a 9F quartz. And it has, it looks like the SBGY003, the one that is like, you know, this hand-wound spring drive with the kind of fluted dial. It looks exactly like that, but it's 9F and it has a solid gold bezel and then gold plated, probably markers.
Sure.
No. That is as tempting.
No, okay.
That's about as tempted
as you're gonna get.
Yeah, I feel like two tone, but not on a bracelet. You know, no two tone bracelets for me.
Sure. Yeah,
it's getting a little too far.
And blue dials. Yeah.
Yeah. Zach Kazan. Give me that Port Royale. I got to chug.
Yeah, the Port Royale. Yes, that's what that should be. Forget bluesy. Port Royale is what it should be called. Yeah. What about you, Zach? Two-tone?
I'm not a huge two-tone fan. I feel like as long as I've been into watches, I feel like there's like always been this like call that like two-tone's coming back. Like it's always like almost back and like maybe it never fully comes back. It's just one of those things that's like, we're just always on the precipice of like two-tone becoming like super popular, but it never does. Not really my taste. I like gold. I think gold's great, but I don't particularly like the look of two-tone. I just kind of associate it with like a two-tone bracelet, like Zach said. Like it's just not really super appealing to me. But hey, maybe it'll actually come back. Maybe it'll like really be back soon.
I think I'd prefer all gold to two-tone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely. All gold done right is all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at us. We're right back talking about watches.
Yeah. Can't get very far.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
Is there just, any non other non
there's a lot more watch
buttons?
Questions in here. There's only one that I don't know. There's one in here that I think honestly could probably be its own episode. and it's how did your philosophy in watch collecting evolve by talking and thinking watches so much with so many people? For the majority of us, it's a lonely hobby. And I think that second part really touches on something that we don't really think about all that often. That it'd be fun to get some maybe other collectors in here to kind of talk to us about it. So thank you for that question, though. I think it is really interesting, and I think that we would probably all have a lot to say about that, especially in the context of more normal collectors, as normal as any of us are. But I think we take it for granted a lot that we're like around other watch people like day in, day out.
Oh,
and
sure.
Most collectors are maybe like, they don't know anybody else that's into watches outside of like the forum or something like that, right? So like you can see where it maybe could be like a lonely thing. Okay, let's get away from watches. Zach Kazan, what do you do when you are not, when you need to get away? You're like, gosh, my head is just like saturated with all this watch stuff from work and this or that. What do you turn to? What do you do? What do you do in your free time?
Oh man, it's a lot. Watch movies, like I talk movies on the podcast frequently, and probably my like my go-to kind of like clear my head, you know, hobby, I guess. Like I love watching movies. I've been for you know, much longer than I've been into watches really my entire life. Like I have a large DVD and Blu-ray collection, more than I could probably ever actually watch, and so I'm just constantly trying to consume stuff, and I watch everything, so movie buff. So that's probably my like go-to non-watch related pursuit these days.
And you were recently a guest on a podcast talking about movies, is this correct?
Yeah, so shout out to Fifth Wrist Radio. They have a podcast network where they talk about watches, so the host of that podcast reached out to me and was like, hey, we do a podcast that talks about watches and pop culture like movies often specifically. So they invited me on to talk about you know, a little bit of what I do at Worn and Wound, and also to talk movies. So the idea behind that podcast is they do like a draft for every episode. So we did a movie draft for the year 1999, which is a really great movie year, kind of like if you're a movie buff, it's a historic year. Lots of great stuff that year. So, give that a listen. We'll put it in the show notes. It's a fun episode. If you, I guess, if you like movies, or if you like listening to me specifically talk about movies, I don't know. Maybe you'll make up your mind after.
No, that's great. Listening, so. All right, Zach. It's the year's 1999. You can go and see one movie in the theater. What's it going to be?
So 99 was the Sixth Sense year. Yeah. So, I mean, I think Sixth Sense was probably like, you know, I remember seeing that movie in the theater in 1999. And it was just like,
that's the one. If you're only seeing one movie in a theater in 1999, that's the movie it's going to be.
I mean, there's so many good, like Fight Club was that year.
Was it Matrix that year?
Yeah. Matrix was that year. Listen to the draft. There's a lot of good.
Okay.
We talk about a lot of good
Strange Days come out in 99? Because I remember that having some like Y2K sort of.
Oh, might have. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, Zach Weiss, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you do anything outside of thinking about lunch?
Of course. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's been kind of weird with COVID, of course, so that, like, threw things off. But I was going to a lot of concerts before that, probably at least one a month. Times more, typically of the metal variety, metal shows.
Now, when you say metal, do you mean like Imagine Dragons, you know, stuff like this?
Imagine Dragons.
Yeah, what kind of, yeah, it's been hardcore. So what kind of metal bands are you into?
So yeah, I'm more of the death metal, thrash metal, doom metal, black metal kind of variety. There's an infinite amount of metal bands out there, and they're almost always touring. And there's always something new and something interesting. And it's not like there's that one band that you have to go see. Like there's the one big band. It's they're all small basically, or they're too big. Yeah. So like, and there's always something playing or some interesting European brand in town or something of that nature. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
If somebody's looking to get into that, if somebody's death metal curious, what's like a good band or two that they should like check out?
Yeah, this is the scary part. I don't, you know, like, how do you even recommend somebody get into this stuff?
Is that a band on your shirt right
there?
Yes,
this is Pallbearer. They're, you know, so they're a doom metal band by their own, like, I think their website's like Pallbearer Doom, but they actually they have clean vocals versus like a snarling kind of growling vocal.
Yeah.
And to me, they're more of a continuation of that kind of like classic rock kind of genre that, you know, existed once, you know, back in the day. Music used to, early Floyd, things like that. If you listen to like the Umaguma live album, it used to, back in the dates us, but back when I bought that CD, it was a two CD set. I guess at one point it was probably two sides of a vinyl, but one of it was just a live side. And that side, that's like one of the most fundamentally excellent 45 minutes of music ever, and for me at least. And it's just like really intense, heavy psychedelic that I find really kind of has bled into some of the music I listen to now. In fact, some bands cover those albums from the metal world, but Pallbearer is kind of in that kind of vein. Big guitar sound, songs are 7 to 12 minutes long, but it's not like if you put it on, your friends would be like grossed out by the music, which is a side effect of metal at times. But
sure,
if you want to get into like more like death metal, big fan of Gate Creeper. They're also a really fun show. Power Trip is a little more thrash metal, also excellent, but unfortunately their lead singer passed away. But I don't know. There's really an infinite amount out there. Ooh, this is a good one. If you do want to freak your neighbors out or whatever, Blood Incantation, their albums, top of the, just really fantastic.
Blood Incantation. Okay. Yeah.
The names of these bands are great.
The names are
like, they're so good.
Yeah. They're famous for their logo, which is completely and utterly like illegible. So it's actually easier to recognize by the fact that you can't tell what the hell it says.
Okay. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. It's excellent.
This reminds me of that watch you reviewed, Zach. Was it the Dunwich Boars or the you said the name of it sounded like the episode of a Game of Thrones episode.
Oh, the yes. Oh, it's, of course, it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't. I can't remember. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It looks like it feels like something from it could be like on the cover of a death metal album.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. It could be the name of it.
The Duneshore Shallows.
The Visitor Co. Yeah,
and Visitor, yes, of course. He's a metalhead, right?
He's a metalhead. We've talked metalhead. Unfortunately, I can't remember his name right now. But shout out to that brand. We've gone over some recent listening, what we've been into, kind of thing.
No, that's awesome.
And I finally have tickets to see a concert.
Oh, do you?
In November.
Yeah.
Another great band, Inter Arma, one of my favorite live shows.
So. Nice. Okay. I can't remember the last live music I saw was probably maybe 8 years ago, and maybe 7 years ago in St. Louis. You're gonna make fun of me.
Imagine Dragons, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No. It was
Insane Clown Posse.
It was Churches.
Churches? Oh. Yeah. Well, that's
this was kind of fun. Before they were, I don't know if they're big now, but they were. Yeah. We saw them at kind of a smaller venue in St. Louis, and it was a good show. my wife likes him.
No, I like that kind of era. I mean, my musical tastes do go beyond metal as well.
Sure.
And there's a certain era of that kind of like EDM-y kind of stuff. Like, I'm not, I don't know, that's a whole world. It's massive, and I know that's it's also wildly complicated, but there's a sort of like, I don't know, like Church's, the Knife, bands like that, they were like a little like kind of heavy in a certain way. I mean, they're still totally danceable, and they had like remixes, but there was like a kind of dark kind of quality, somber quality to it at the same time. I always appreciated that.
You can still have it on in the background of like a party with a bunch of people in your house and that. I like the sound of Paul Bearer, though. I might have to give them a...
Paul Bearer, very good.
Give them a check. Yeah. Give them a look. No, that's cool. I know I kind of like joke about us like not being away from watches, but like we legitimately are watch people. We like watches. Like I don't, and I think a lot of us spend our free time by choice, like perusing eBay or Watch Recon or reading stuff about old watches or whatever it is. That's just something that we do with our free time. When I'm not doing that, I'm a father. I've got my hands full with a 9-year-old now he needs like in camps and sports and school and all, so it's like always you have to be somewhere, and people with multiple kids, more power to you. I don't know how you do that.
It's not like there's that much time for other things, you know, like at this point, like, I mean, you're a runner, like that's
I run. I get up really early to do that, like before my son is up, and yeah, and that's that. And but you know, you have to, because I don't want to rely. You know, it's not like I make my wife get him ready and get him to school and all that kind
of
stuff, right?
But it's weird to think of that like as a hobby per se, but it's like a thing you do for yourself that's like probably important, you know. And it's like, I feel like at this point in our life, it's like those little things are the other things, you know. It's like cooking. I like cooking. I'm not great at cooking, but we cook a lot, and that's becomes an activity.
It's important. Know? Yeah, I like to like make cocktails. Like mix, not like I'm gonna go drink 8 cocktails tonight, but like, not even really for that.
Blake likes to drink. But, that's the best.
Yeah, it's less so for that, but it's more like there's something just really fun about like the cocktail chemistry, I guess, or putting together different cocktails, like using an egg white or in a whiskey flip, or like just different things that are. I like trying different things like that, I don't know. I like that kind of stuff. I also build mechanical keyboards now and again, which is another kind of like therapeutic thing for me to do, like opening up switches and like putting a little lubrication on parts so it sounds the way that you want it to. So it's not going click, 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 click. My keyboard does not sound like that in the office, as you can attest to. It's silent. and then I read. In the evenings, I'm reading a book right now called The Scout Mindset by Julia Galef, I think, which I would highly recommend. Carl Sagan is one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. I've usually kind of cycle through his books every once a year or every other year or something like that. And so there's a lot of things like that I try to do to just kind of quiet my mind. And I think it also helps when we sit down to like form thoughts and write words about something like a watch. Like it kind of helps your mind find those things and settle into. And I know we were talking about this the other day. I'm working on this thing on the Explorer, and we wrote all these words, and it's a pretty simple small steel watch, and I don't even really talk about its heritage at all. And like, and we all do this consistently. Like, what are we writing about? And even thinking now, I'm like, what did I put in there? It's like 7 pages long, and I'm I don't know, you just kind of find things. But I think the more that you kind of give yourself your head time to, like, healthy time to do other things, the easier it is to kind of refocus and center on something small about watches that you can find and really, like, think on and articulate really well.
It's that intellectual curiosity that you were talking about. And, you know, regards to another question, I think that, like, if you... you know, like if you have the intellectual curiosity to be interested in mechanical watches and in watches as a hobby, you probably have, you're probably curious about lots of other things too. And I think it's important to kind of like follow those interests wherever they go. Speaking only for myself, I think it helps me like do my job better to like, you know, to pursue other other things and to like to think about, you know, whether it's like a movie I've seen or a book I'm reading or like a trip I've taken or whatever. It just kind of like informs, you know, what I do in my job in an important way, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that this is probably a trait that a lot of collectors share, just being curious, generally curious, because
yeah, it's so sure.
If you're going to find it in you to collect something like a watch or a stamp or a lamp or whatever, like, yeah, that's there must be something deeper there that you find interesting that you can grab onto.
It's funny, I was thinking about it because I buy a lot of sneakers. I believe you might as well.
Yeah.
I don't look up anything about them.
You're not in so the I do not.
I would not consider
and...
myself a collector. I'm purely like a consumer when it comes to those, and that's kind of the divide, right? It's like, but I'm not that with watches. It's like a labor to buy a watch. It's you know, and let alone think about them in other ways. But for me, sneakers, it's like it's purely impulse, style based.
And you're not influenced by the kind of hype shoes that come out often and the culture around that and the historic, it's just this is what I like.
Yeah.
That's what I'm about. I think more people should have that.
Yeah.
Kind of
it's kind of refreshing. And I kind of imagine like what that would be like with watches. And I think maybe once upon a time it was. I just bought it because I liked it.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. Now there's layers.
Imagine that. You bought it because you like it.
What? I know. I mean, it's obviously easier with sneakers when it's like $75 and it's whatever.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. Well, cool. I appreciate everyone that did write in and asked us questions. We'll circle back to some of the watch questions that were there, because there were a few of them that were interesting, at least I will say. So, and thank you. If you've been listening to the Worn and Wound podcast for 200 episodes, thank you.
Wow.
We are here because of you, and you keep us going. So let us know. In the comments, leave a review, you know, whatever you do, keep doing you and keep listening. And here's to the next 100. 200.
Next 200.
All right. Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for listening. Until next time.